and welcome back to Community in Code. My name is Chris Reynolds. You know that thing where you're in the back of an Uber, half checked out after a long conference, and a fully formed idea just smacks you upside the head? For my guest this week, that Uber ride out of a WordCamp US became a weekly podcast with over 100 episodes. Bud Krause has been in the WordPress community since 2009, teaching code in New York City classrooms and writing the educational stuff that a whole generation of us probably learned from. These days, he's hosting Seriously Bud, a show about everything in a WordPresser's life except WordPress. We got into a lot, how Star Trek is responsible for his love of technology, why he's convinced airports will one day be teleports, whether AI is making him dumber, smarter, or both simultaneously, and a genuinely great riff on why WordPress people feel like they own WordPress in a way that doesn't quite happen anywhere else. There's also some real talk about where he thinks WordPress has lost its way with the block editor and the fact that Elementor is eating a third of the web. Join me on this hangout with Bud. Let's get into it. Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast where we talk to the human beings behind the commits. And today I am here with Bud Krause, who has been in the WordPress community for, I don't know, a really long time as an educator, as a podcaster, as just, I don't know, everyone's grandpa, I guess, or something.
Stop right there. Come on. Cut that out. Come on.
Well, Bud, why don't you tell everyone?
All right, hold on. You know, every time I go to a work camp, you know, they say to me, they come up with, how old are you? And I go, like, what? There's an age restriction here? There's an age limit?
It's like the height. It's the height. You need to be this tall to enter this ride.
Yeah. Well, whatever. As I once said to Matt Mullenweg, I said, you know, I think I'm the oldest person in WordPress. And he said to me, well, how old are you? And I told him, and he said, well, you're not the oldest, but you're getting there.
Well, so, I mean, we're all getting there. Like,
that WordPress, is true.
WordPress is legally able to drink at this point.
Yeah.
And then some. And I mean, there are some of us who have been there from the beginning or very close to the beginning.
I have noticed, and I'm not the only one getting older in WordPress.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But why don't you tell anybody who's listening who might not already know you what it is that you do?
Well, I'd like to say that I'm a content creative. That is, I create WordPress content for WordPress businesses. So I get hired to write articles, educational material. Of course, that's kind of dwindling now with AI. That is, you know, I don't think there's a big future in it, unfortunately, because I love to write. And write technical stuff. But like I said, I don't know. But I do spend more time these days with the podcast called Seriously Bud. Mm-hmm. And it's where you've been on it. And
I've been on it
recently. And it's an unexpected conversation with someone in the WordPress community. So every Friday at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I drop an episode. And it's not your typical WordPress, you know, podcast shop talk kind of thing. In fact, I stay away from all that as much as I can and just talk about your life, you know, who you are, who your partner might be, children, family, what you like to do, you know, everything that's not WordPress. Now, some people that's kind of hard to do, and some people it's pretty easy to do. So I'm always looking for the unusual, interesting, super interesting stories. I say that because everybody does have a really good story, as I think people know. It's just a matter of getting people, giving them the opportunity to say it, which I think the podcast does.
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who has done lots of talks at events and somebody who does lots of virtual events and things like that, and has also talked to other people who also have done talks at events, like the thing that separates somebody from being a speaker, in whatever definition of the word that you want to give and somebody who does not identify as that, is just feeling like the story that you do have or the stories that you have are worth telling. Like this, it's just a feeling. It's just, that's the only difference.
You know, that is true. And, you know, I think it's kind of audacious of me in some ways to even have a podcast like I have. But I do like stories. I like to tell stories. I've always been that way. And I'm gonna give you an exclusive here, Chris. No one has ever heard this, okay? So I think about this a lot. When I was, 15 or so, I had a guy my age come up to me and say, you know, Kraus, one day you're going to be really good at storytelling. You're going to love stories and all that stuff. And, you know, Barrington Weinberg was 100% right. So, I remember him saying that. And I just took note of it, but I really didn't think much of it and it turned out to be true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like, I don't know, my dad once upon a time was planning on going into like broadcasting, like we wanted to be a DJ on the radio. Mm-hmm. And that never actually panned out. But he was always sort of like a communicator and ultimately like got into human resources, which is also about communication. And so like, I think that like, you know, for me, I think that definitely like played a role in how I view the world and maybe added to a little bit of comfort around talking in front of people. I was involved in theater and stuff like that. Like, you know, like, but like none of that is a prerequisite. And I've talked to people on the podcast before that are like, you know, they felt like they wanted to start presenting things because it would benefit their career in whatever, you know, whatever context. And they did it and ended up like, even though it was like against type, like they were doing it because they felt like they had to, and they were doing it because it would be good for them, but they didn't really want to do it. But then once they did do it a couple times, they really got hooked on it. And I think that it really is just that, like getting over the hump.
Well, you know, it turns out, when I was a little kid, and still to this day, not as much, I always listened to talk radio. Mm-hmm. And now this goes way back. So I was very interested in human conversation from the beginning of time. And in fact, I sort of fall asleep to people every night listening to the radio of just people talking. But, you know, and then as I got older, I sort of wished I had the opportunity to be a host on a talk show. I think I would have been good. Mm-hmm. The podcast sort of serves that need, you know.
I was about to say talk radio doesn't exist anymore, right? But like it does. Mm-hmm. That's what podcasts are. Like it's literally what podcasts are. And maybe 5 years ago, like I don't know that we were talking about podcasts as much. They sort of kind of like had a wave and the wave was kind of declining. But then like now that it's like a huge deal again. And I think there is this need to like feel connection to other humans, and having voices in your ears is a really intimate way of having that sort of connection.
Oh, absolutely. As for podcasts, it's they've been around for a long time, but it's only in the last, like you say, 5, 6, 7 years that everybody and their mother now has a podcast because they realized there's a very low barrier to entry. It doesn't cost anything and everybody can do it. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily well, you know, but they can do it.
I mean, the technology is getting easier. The technology that you can use to make a podcast is getting
anything
is getting so much easier and more prevalent to use and cheaper. And yeah, for sure.
When are you going to ask me this question about when I got into tech?
Well, I was getting to that, but I'm actually like, I'm still, I like this path we're on. Cause I'm actually interested in when you decided to get into podcasting.
So it was not what I was expecting to do by far, because go ask Bob Dunn. I used to tell him 1,000 times, Bob, why would anybody do a podcast? This is the most ridiculous thing that you're doing. I mean, you know, this was, 8, 9 years ago, you know, I was kidding him all the time. What are you doing this for? And then WordCamp US 2023, Washington, D.C., I was leaving and I was in an Uber. And then all of a sudden, like a bolt of lightning, I swear to God, I got hit by this thing. And I'll never forget it, obviously. And I said, you know, I wish I could just spend more time with Chris Reynolds, okay, or anybody, you name it, Marcus Burnett, whatever. The name, I said, just because I love talking to the people and I don't really spend enough time with them because it's just rush, rush. And at that moment I said, hey, I could do a podcast. Mm-hmm. Where I have a conversation with, with people like that. And so everything, even the music, my daughter introducing me, the whole thing was born in 1 second. The only thing that wasn't born was the name. And that came from my designer. She came up, Jackie Goldstein, I'll give her a shout out. She's my designer. And she came up with the idea of Seriously Bud. It was just whether it was going to be serious, how you're going to say it, you know. And we said, as a question. Mm-hmm. And that, and then I think, you know, we decided right away, everybody would say it during the show. And the whole thing was just very easy to, I never struggled with an idea of what the show, anything. It just came, you know. And then, you know, one thing led to the next. Now, initially I thought like, well, I would just interview my friends. Okay. Then I would interview people that I sort of know. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I'd interview people that I didn't know at all. Mm-hmm. And I've done all that, you know, mm-hmm. and people from around the world. It's really been, it's an honor really to do this. And I will say, looking back now, I think another thing that kind of was the impetus was in 2017, I took a trip around the United States on Amtrak, and I went all the way around. It took me 19 days. I did stop. I mean, you can't be on a train for 19 days. You know, you have to take a shower, you know. So I would stop along the way, Chicago and Austin and whatever. But I did make a circle all the way around. And in that experience, I had time to talk to people on the train. Mm. And I found myself asking like a million questions. Well, what was your mother like? You know, or do you like fried chicken or what? And so without knowing at the time that I was starting to develop the skills that would be the show, you know, I sort of was without knowing it. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, and you've been running Seriously Bud for quite a while. You've got over 100 episodes now. What are you at?
I know 110 is going to be.
Yeah.
This Friday. So, you know, yeah. And there is no shortage of amazing people to interview. That's the one thing you can count on. The supply is there. The inventory, my friend, is there. Yeah. We have lots and lots of people.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I always say that, like, you know, having this podcast is just an excuse to talk to people that are cool. That's pretty much the barrier.
What am I doing? What am I doing here? But, you know, the, And it's whatever. Next question.
Well, okay. So we'll go back. What did lead to your interest in tech in general? Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, it's easy. Star Trek. And I'm talking the original. I'm talking the original 1960s. Oh yeah, the classic version.
Yeah,
yes, you know, and you know, with Bones and Doctor and Spock and James T. Kirk, and
yep,
that is when I started to realize, you know, I like the science fiction stuff, and yeah, and I never stopped liking it, you know, so that's when I started to realize it. But I don't look at myself really as a techie person per se, but, you know, my friends and a lot of people say, what are you talking about? You know, and compared to them, I am. but I just think that I like to use technology and I like to see it work. Too often it doesn't, but that's it. I don't really have, you know, it's like I like to use the air dryer or what do they call it? Let's say a microwave. Okay. But I don't need to know how the microwave works. I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's not to say I'm never interested in code, but I'm just not interested as much anymore. We have AI, we have all these things now. You know,
you don't need to see how the sausage is made.
I do sometimes take a look and I have to see, but I'm not one of these guys that just, that never really turned me on. However, I taught code forever in New York City and I did like it. And it was also my first experience on a continual, you know, a basis to get up in front of people and talk. And what I learned, cut that out. So what I learned is that if you did it the right way, sort of like a mixture of entertainment and education, they will listen to you and you can talk about anything. It doesn't matter. You have their attention. And my wife used to say, well, how was class today? And I'd say, well, it was really good. And she knew when I said that, it meant that they laughed at all the jokes. Because I didn't go by like whether they learned anything. Okay. I just was like wanted to entertain them and just have fun. So, but I didn't want to, you know, obviously they had to learn. So I was teaching them HTML and CSS and Dreamweaver and WordPress, little JavaScript in there, but, you know, and it was fun. And then I created online courses and all that. So back in the day when you had to know code, it was fun. And then WordPress came along and destroyed all of that. That's, you know, it's not true, obviously. You know, well, How did I get to WordPress?
Yeah, right? What is the thing that steered you towards WordPress in the beginning?
Another memorable moment in my life, 2019, I was having lunch at the Oyster Bar at Grand Central in New York City, very nice, fancy kind of place, business people go and stuff. So I was there with a client friend, and he said, and he was always like 6 months to a year ahead of me, you know, in thinking about what's out there, and a little older than me. And he would say, and he was a very successful financier and store owner and all that, and a great guy. And he said to me, you know, you want to learn WordPress. And I said, oh, come on. You know, this is, I said, I'm a rage against the machine kind of guy. I don't want to learn that WordPress junk. And he said, no, pay attention, bud. You really want to learn this. Here, I'll give you my username and password. Log into my site and take a look. And I did. And I, you know, I saw this thing called the Aussie, like drop down menu or something at the, I forget what it was called. They had all kinds of like very primitive stuff compared to today, right? Mm-hmm. Subscribe to for email. And I mean, it was just really primitive. But I didn't know at the time it wasn't primitive. And I started to figure out what are plugins, what are themes. And then a certain period of time passed and I saw there was this theme called Thesis. I think it was mm-hmm. called Thesis. Maybe mm-hmm. it was called Thematic. No, there was Thesis, but there was a theme called Thematic, okay, which taught you how to create a child theme.
Right.
And once I put that together and figured out how that works and saw like, oh, wow, you can make a template. You could do this. You could. I said, oh, this is mine. Because there comes a point for people that get hooked on this thing that WordPress is theirs, in the sense that you can do whatever you want to do with this. And that's really cool, you know? And then once I learned that, the first thing I thought like, oh, I could teach this. And I did. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you know, 2011, 12, 13, there were so many people that were, they were lining up outside the door to learn WordPress. I mean, you know, the market was ripe and people were from all over New York. They wanted to come and take the class and learn WordPress. So that was a lot of fun. Now, you know, good luck. You know, it's funny. I just want to say real quick, I am now involved in the WP Credits program mm-hmm. where, you know, people from all over the world, you know, they sign up to learn WordPress through their academic institution. Mm-hmm. And then they get assigned a mentor like me to help them learn WordPress. So I'm still doing it, but in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really cool thing. Yeah. Your comment about the discovery that WordPress is theirs struck me because I was thinking about the difference between WordPress and Drupal, because obviously I'm kind of in both worlds because my employer Pantheon does both things. And I've been like trying to like, you know, I've put my foot into the Drupal world a little bit, a couple times, gone to like a DrupalCon and a Drupal camp and things like that. I feel like that sense of ownership is maybe not as present for people who work with Drupal because there's so much more configuration necessary. So like in Drupal, there is this concept of and I've said this a bunch of times, but there's a whole class of professionals in the Drupal ecosystem who are doing essentially like they're maintainers of the site, so that just from a configuration level, like they're the ones that like click the buttons and do the config and like go to all the admin screens and get everything set up, so that the people who use the site can just use the site, do the stuff, edit the content, whatever. They don't need to worry about like creating the content types or anything like that, right? And in WordPress, we don't really like, there are people that kind of sort of do that are just like the web admin.
Right.
But for the most part, that doesn't really exist, not at the same scale. And the reason why is because the admin is not that difficult. Like anybody, I mean, it's only difficult when you add more stuff and you make it complicated, right?
Right, right.
But like at its base, it's pretty easy to understand. And I think that like, yeah, that thing there of ownership, I think that you wouldn't feel that level of ownership if you weren't the ones that are clicking all the buttons and ticking all the boxes, right?
Like, right, I agree. Yeah,
that's just a really interesting like thing. Like I hadn't articulated that is the distinction or a distinction between WordPress and Drupal. But I think I do think that maybe that is a factor.
Maybe it's one of the reasons why it has been so successful is that people mm-hmm. feel an ownership, a very visceral connection to it, and. You know, because as you say, at its simplest, it's pages and posts and media and a bunch of links and navigation and then you get this feeling of like mastery. You know, when I created that child theme and it worked, it was like, oh my Lord, my head exploded because I just said, oh, I can just do everything. And then 3 years later, I figured out what a functions file was for, but that's another story. But you know, remember back in the old days when we used to bring in style sheets with the at import statement and all that. Oh mm-hmm. my goodness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, that's another story. So oh, this is a code. Wait a minute. This is a coding show, right?
We can talk about code.
Yeah. All right.
So, we talked about, you mentioned that your interest in technology came from Star Trek.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, I was raised on the original Star Trek, so like that.
No, you were.
Yes, I was. No, I mean, reruns, I'm not from, but oh, like, okay. Yeah.
You didn't see the originals,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's legit.
And so like, there's so much from that era of science fiction that is kind of no longer fiction, right? Like,
well said. And I'll tell you, here's a case in point. Go watch one of those next gen episodes when it's a little closer to home and they've got iPads, they've mm-hmm. got, you know, this, they've got that, you know, and it's like, oh my Lord. Now I think Steve Jobs noted that he was so influenced by those shows that he said, I want one of those. So I don't think that's, now here's my thing, okay, talking about technology, and here's my big thing is I won't live long enough, but those teletransporters, oh my Lord, I want one of those so bad. So here's my future. I'll give you a little glimpse. I'm like Jules Verne. Come back in 100 years and see if I was right. There won't be any more airplanes, but there will be airports or teleports that you go to where it used to be airports. And you put yourself in one of those pods at what was once an airport, and you press in a bunch of buttons, and you end up in like a minute later in Paris.
I mean,
and you'll end up in the De Gaulle airport teleport in Paris. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now I know everybody says it's impossible and you can't do it. And you know, I've heard I've asked AI how to build it. And you know, AI says it can be done. Not yet, but there's a path to doing this. But I mean, I won't see it, but boy, do I wish I could see something like that. Cause I think that's just beyond amazing to me. Magic, you know, yeah. I think it'll happen.
I mean, what is it? Any sufficiently advanced technology is equivalent to magic. I mean, that is.
Well, the only thing is now you'll have to make sure that there aren't any flies that get into the teleport.
Yes, right. Yes.
Keep out a fly.
We've seen what happens when a fly gets.
Or don't try this with a cat because that's, you know, that's the first version of the fly was was with Dandolo, the cat, and the cat just disappeared. So they'll try it with some, but I could see, can you imagine? I mean, shipping stuff with a teleporter.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
so maybe we don't do people. Maybe we just do objects, you know, but wow.
I mean, like, and in so many ways, technology is influenced by commerce and capitalism and whatever.
Sure.
And if there's no other reason to invest in a technology that could transport people or objects across vast differences for like distances for less money or less time, then yes, commerce and shipping containers and things would be a huge market.
When I hear all those people tell me that it's impossible, I go, yeah, it's impossible to fly over the ocean too. I mean, it was impossible until it was done.
Right.
So don't tell me it's impossible. If the human brain can think of it, there's possible, we're probably going to get there. And obviously, you know, now I would recommend though that we don't, you know, like, it's like a, you know, it's like codecs, right? Compression, decompression, that kind of thing. So we don't decompress somebody. I was going to say, you can't do this and then send their little digital bits over the internet. That's not a good idea. Yeah, packet switching. Why not? Well, you see, it sounds crazy, right? Can't packet switching be one of the core concepts of this idea of teleporting? I would think it will be. Mm-hmm. So it's so cool. There's so many little things that you could start to see. Like, I think this could be, you know, that you could see sort of like, you know, these technologies are all put together, right? You know, a new technology is born from old technology or technologies. I think it's really amazing.
Are there things that you use or take for granted now that you can link back in your mind to like science fiction that you sort of grew up in? Because I was just thinking, like, you know, I've got an Apple Watch, right?
Right.
And talking into a watch that is smart, that can do stuff, that can like send right. messages across distances,
right.
that can like
right.
Siri is yelling at me now. You know, like that was a thing. Like I can literally see in my head like memories of like seeing this in Star Trek and other sort of like and like get smart.
Get smart. That's right.
Like all these things where it was like. Or like the Jetsons or things like, you know, like this is the wild imaginings of like some crazy far future. But like, no, it's like stuff that we have in our hand.
Yeah. You want me to name something?
Yeah. What things do you think about when you think about like the sort of things that are like normal now?
A refrigerator. No, I'm just kidding. No, but you know, I say that in kidding, but my parents, they didn't have initially a refrigerator. They had a guy deliver an ice block.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's how they refrigerated. You know, eventually they had refrigerators, but, well, the first real kind of technology that I was exposed to as a little kid was color TV.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I remember an era very vaguely where we just had black and white TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then they introduced color TV with the idea that men would want to buy this so they could watch football every Sunday in color. Do you know that's how color TV took off? That was the gimmick that made it popular?
I did not know that it was football. I'm not super
sure.
You don't
know enough old people.
Yeah, that's true.
but it was true. The whole machine behind color TV, I mean, the marketing and everything, was geared to the NFL broadcasting Sunday games in color. And guys had to have it in color, and away we went. So I remember a little bit of that, you know. NBC used to have a peacock that the feathers moved, the animated feathers, and they would say something like, we're now broadcasting all of our stuff in color, in full color. So, yeah, I remember all that stuff, yeah.
And now I know that you mentioned a couple of times using AI, and I know that you use that.
You mean it's a passing fad, AI? Let's face it. It's, you know.
Is it? I mean, tell me, like, how do you see AI in the world that we are working in, and in how do you use it in sort of your work and your life?
I'm going to give you the best answer I can give you is, how do I see it? I can't tell you. I mean, I just don't know. I'm just not that smart to know. I should ask AI. in many ways, I think it's making me dumber. I don't think there's any question about that, but it's also making me smarter. Mm. And they talk about de-skilling, and I like to think of it as reskilling. You know, mm-hmm. I think I might have. Anyway. So it's enabled me to do things that I could not possibly do until it's here. But there's no way to know. Anybody, you know, can't know where all this is going. I do think sort of what I can see, and maybe I think the next phase in the next couple of years will be total agentic AI. So that instead of it telling you how to fix something, it will just do it. Yeah. So it'll say, here are the instructions to do this. Click on this and click on that. You'll just go, no, do it. Whatever it is. Some app, something in a browser, something in your operating system. It'll just do it. Or you won't even have to ask it. It'll just do it on its own, which is, you know, maybe not, who knows. But I could definitely see we're moving from an era from informational to, you know, some kind of, it does it by itself. It does it if you ask it to do, which will be really cool. Mm-hmm. I think. I mean, you know, there's so many things now. You know, it's what I kind of see is like there's a lot of companies sticking AI into their products and services. And I literally mean sticking it in because you don't need it. Like, what do I need AI into whatever? But some things are so like whisper flow, okay, is like you're not really cognizant of the AI in it. It's there. And I think it's really cool. I like sort of that invisible nature of it. It's like anything else. It's there and we're using it, but I don't need to know.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. It's a very, very interesting, fast paced, fast moving time we're living in. And I think that the rate of change that we've experienced, this particularly in the last 25 years, is really one of the causes of our so many disruptions in our society. Mm-hmm. People just can't adapt and adjust to these changes that fast, and we're having problems.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think that even talking about like we're the world has not fully recovered from
fax machines.
Well, that. But I was going to say the internet. Like, I think that, like, you know, like the internet is still pretty young, especially if you're talking about like technology and like advancements and on a scale. And now we're like AI is just sort of like just a hyper, whatever, you know, it makes it even faster. And I agree. Like, I think that there's like, it's super Wild Westy. And we don't know what we don't know.
And you know, I don't know about you. I'm sure this has probably happened to you, but that I've looked at something online and wasn't quite sure if it was or not AI. Mm-hmm. And it bothers me that I don't know. It really does. I should know.
Yeah.
Maybe there should be a disclaimer. Maybe there should be. I don't like it, you know, especially if it's something that's, you know, influencing a decision.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know if this is real or not.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
And maybe AI is what's real.
Do you feel like you have an
AI? I'm not going anywhere. I just dropped something.
Do you feel like you have an AI dar? Like, do you feel like if you can see AI, like if you're reading a blog post or something and it doesn't say that it's written by AI or written by with the assistance of AI, do you feel like you can like pick up on the cues in the writing or in like videos or anything like that?
Mm-mm. I don't think so. I don't have like AI radar, you know, where I can tell. I do not think so. And I also think most people don't either.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's just, you know, If you take any article and you stick it in, copy and paste it into ChatGPT and say, what's the likelihood that this is written by AI? You'll almost always get the same result. You'll see the answer. Well, some of it was, here are the telltale. I don't think AI knows if it's AI anymore. So, yeah, there's a lot of very serious challenges that it presents and serious opportunities, you know. Yeah, it's just really... I don't know if human beings are ready to handle this stuff. I don't know.
I mean, I there's just a lot. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of disruption. There's a lot of anxiety about, like, what does it all mean? I feel like we're feeling that in particular, like, in, like, our sort of web development sort of communities. It's a huge point of anxiety. Because, like, if a robot can do my job faster than I can, where does that leave me?
I don't know. I mean, I've mentioned, writing and stuff is really diminishing. I think you sort of need to figure out a way to, as always, reinvent yourself, figure out how to use the technology in a way that it can't do it for you. And what that really means, as far as I can tell, is bring your authentic self to whatever you do, because AI can't do that for you. Yeah. So seriously, Bud, as a very authentic brand, me, that AI cannot yet reproduce, and I don't want it to. AI, yes, it can do conversations and all that, but it can't do the kind of conversations that I do. It probably can, but it can't do it the way I do it. And if I have any value, that's what I can do,
Right. Yeah.
Because the show has developed a unique style, brand. I'm aware of that. I know what it is. And I knew when I started it, all you have to do is just be yourself and hopefully somebody will listen to it. And if not, I couldn't be anybody else. So who else was I going to be? The idea to me is to bring some authenticity, some humanness to whatever it is that you're creating that AI cannot do. Whatever that means.
Do you get excited about about what things are coming on the horizon, or like the development of WordPress in particular?
No.
You don't get excited about that.
No, I don't. Unfortunately, I used to. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm very disappointed, and I hate to say this, with the direction that WordPress has gone in. I have tried so much to love full site editing and blocks. And don't get me wrong, I do like a lot of it. But man, there's a lot of stuff in it that is just really sucky. And I'll give you a case in point. Okay. I'm doing something now, something very simple for the navigation. I want to create like a label. Right. So not a link, but just like a little piece of text that says something and then a drop down off of that. Good luck. I'm using 2025, and it has been torture. I have used AI. I've done this. I've done that. JavaScript, blah, blah, blah. Come on now. For a time immemorial when we had classic themes, this was the easiest thing. You create a custom link. You put a hashtag in. You take the hashtag out. And now I can't. See, if you can do something from the past and you can't do it easily in the future, that is a bad situation. So I see things in the current version of WordPress that is, I think in many ways WordPress has lost its way. And I don't like to say that, because I know there are so many smart people that work on the project.
Yeah.
I don't. So I don't like to, you don't want me to. And so it's easy to sit back and criticize. I understand that. But, this is a project that I love, and I just hate to see, hey, is it any wonder that Elementor now accounts for a third of all websites, WordPress sites, I guess, using Elementor?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they include that into their, you know, their self-hosted Elementor. I don't think they do. And having said that, Elementor just laid off a third of its 300 people staff.
Right.
But the point is, that's another, but a third of all WordPress sites use Elementor?
Yeah.
What does that tell you?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I did a live stream with Miriam and
Miriam who? No.
Miriam Schwab. I can't remember who doesn't know
Miriam Schwab.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the tech guy now. He's escaping my brain because I'm bad with names. But anyway, I did a live stream with them about Angie a couple months ago, which is their AI thing. And they said something about Elementor powers 33% of all WordPress sites. And I'm like, that can't be right. And she's like, 2 million sites. Just throw 2 million sites is like a number that you're like, wait, what? You got to be kidding me. That is insane. And like,
especially when a short period of time ago, it was 10%.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you're right. I think that obviously, I mean, they have an incredibly talented team and they've done, and one of the things that Miriam said, when I had her on, maybe it was on this show, was that she felt like, you know, they kind of caught lightning in a bottle.
They did.
And they just rode a wave and it was just sort of like serendipitous. But I do think that it says something about what people are looking for and needing. If there is one particular product that is dominating that much to that extent, like there's obviously some, there's the there, right? They've got to be doing something right. And that is where, like, if it was any other product in any other industry, right? And there's this many people using this one flavor of this product, then the company that ran the product, you know, owned that product would be like, oh, we're going to put all of our ducks in this basket, all of our eggs in this basket, because this is the one that people want. And like, we'll focus on that. But like, because they're a plugin, because it's not core, because of whatever, because WordPress is a project, but it's not really managed like a product, because it's open source. Anybody can contribute, which means that there's no product roadmap. There's no, you know, like there's user testing, but there's not like in the same sort of like feedback consumer advisory boards and things like that. You know, like there's not as much opportunity for direction.
Well, take, you know, when the Gutenberg project was first announced years ago now, you know, Matt said there'd be four stages. Okay. Mm-hmm. But nowhere was there any, there was no flexibility to say, you know, stage three collaboration, no, it's not going to work. We're going to do something else. You know, there's this thing called AI. We're going to focus on, you know, it was like, we're going to just go down this path no matter what. That's ridiculous. I mean, and we see that it's ridiculous. But now going back to Elementor, it's funny. I saw it when it first came out and I was at a meetup in New York City and somebody demonstrated it and we all looked at each other like, wow. What a game changer. Of course, you only had the classic editor then. You know, there was no block editor. And we just said, boy, does this fill a need? If they don't screw this up, it's going to be huge. And I told Miriam the story a million, and she said, it's amazing. And I saw it when it was 200,000 downloads, you know. Mm-hmm. And turned out, you know, to be unbelievable. But they've also lost their way a little bit, I think, that they have strayed into things that they probably should have stayed out of. But the other side of the coin is a third of all WordPress sites use it. Yeah. And obviously it tells you there's something wrong with the full site, with the block editor, if that happened. I always thought it'd be in the early stages of the Gutenberg project, I always thought, hey, why don't they just buy Elementor and just be done with it? Or, you know, and who's to say there wasn't discussions about that? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a major, you look at the block editor and you look at Elementor and there's still such a gap between the two of them, maybe bigger than ever, you know?
And I don't know how many folks in the WordPress community know this little factoid, but for a while, for a decent amount of time, the Drupal Association was looking at and evaluating Gutenberg to be to be the editor of choice in Drupal, and they decided against it. And instead, what they built, I've seen demos, it looks like all the things that full site editing and Gutenberg should have been, but is not. Like, yeah, they went, we're going to, and it, but it came really, really close. And I know Matt was really pushing for it and whatever. They came really close to adopting Gutenberg, and then they backed out and they said, so the end result is, instead of using this thing that exists that is built into WordPress and is, I guess, being built into Tumblr and whatever, you know, as a like a de facto standard, they decided, no, we're going to write all of that ourselves the way that we want to do it. And from what I have seen, they've done a better job of doing that thing.
How about that? You know, because the initial vision was that, you know, the Black Editor would sort of become a language that all these others, many, many, you know, let's say Constant Contact would use it or whatever. Any kind of publishing platform would use it.
Yep.
And there's nowhere near it. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That is just not going to happen. So it's been a disappointment. Let's just say that. And I just, as much as I got, do I pull for it and want it to be better? I just, you know, I think it's also a project that's just really stuck. It's sort of rudderless right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, when 7.0 came out, the big thing was going to be real-time collaboration, and they couldn't ship it, you know. It tells you, you know, that everything's not so good.
Yeah.
So what else can we talk about? I'm sick of this stuff.
Well, I was going to say, like, we're getting close to the end. I was going to say, we've blown through our time. And so I was going to give you an opportunity to tell anyone who might be listening or watching this in the future, where can they find you on the internet?
No. Here, if you're doing this, let's do this like seriously, Bud style, you would say. Okay. So who do you recommend?
Take over my podcast now?
Yes. So who do you recommend I have as a future guest?
Who do you recommend that I have as a future guest, Bud?
On Code and Community.
On Community and Code.
Community and Code. Well, you know, they always, you know, my guests always, well, who have you had? Okay. Who do you want? Is there anybody you want?
I've actually got a list. There's a bunch of people that I haven't reached out to yet, but I do have a list that is growing.
Yeah, I know. I have a list too. Yeah, I get it. All right. So what was the real last question that you asked?
The real last question was, where can people find you on the internet if they're looking?
If you're looking, but I have two sites. One is seriouslybud.com. What a surprise. Mm-hmm. That's seriouslybud.com. And I have all of my episodes archived there, so you can hear all, including Chris's, which is a good episode. Good, not great. But
I think so.
Good, not great. And and you could also sign up for my newsletter there. And you could even apply to be a guest. So I like that. It's a fun kind of website, and I'm making it funner. And then the other site is joyofwp.com. Mm-hmm. And that's my serious site, in that that's where I talk about the work that I do as a content creative, and what I've done. There's a whole list of all this kind of stuff there. And if you're interested in hiring me. Anyway, So Bud at joyofwp.com is probably the best way to reach me, or on Slack at joyofwp. Did I say Slack? I mean Twitter, Joy of WP, and Slack. I'm in the Make WordPress channel. I'm in the post status. You know, I'm easy to find. I somehow get found. Facebook. Don't forget Facebook.
Wow. People still use Facebook. No, I know people still use Facebook.
my generation is the only one that still uses Facebook. What do you use? Instagram, TikTok?
Yes, right? I definitely use Instagram. Yeah. Which makes me old, because that's not
true.
Yeah.
You're such an
there's
old
a, there's
guy.
There's a particular generation that there's the generation uses Facebook, and then the next one behind that uses Instagram, and the next one behind that is like, you know, TikTok.
We are so marked by all this, you know, like the words we use, the things we like. You know, I started realizing, God, the stuff I talk about, nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. You know, I go to WordCamp and I mean, I have to explain what Star Trek was.
Well, you never have to explain what Star Trek is.
Not
to
you.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah, because you saw the reruns. You stinker, you. Okay.
Well, thanks again, Bud, for coming on. Thank you, everyone who might be watching. And yeah, we'll see you all on the internet. Mm-hmm.